Welcome, everyone. So are you tired of the same old ways of seeing things? Well, you've come to the right place. Here we cut through the world of surface appearances and look for the light that's rare in the depths. Here we dive into the dark waters where strange creatures move. Here we're free to be that foolish knight who lunges at windmills and who lights up the world with his magical vision. It's all too much, says George Harrison. That's true, but all the more reason to jump into it and intoxicate yourself with life's infinite profusion. After all, you don't discover new lands by sticking close to the shore, do you? Welcome to the Wisdom of. Coming up today, fear of public opinion. Okay, how's it going, everybody? I hope you're all doing well out there. Okay, well, so in this episode, I thought I'd try to say something about a book written by the philosopher Bertrand Russell called The Conquest of Happiness, published in 1930. Actually, more specifically, what I want to do is I want to try to say something about a particular chapter in that book, a chapter called Fear of Public Opinion. I think that what he has to say there is as relevant and as important as ever, even though he said it almost 100 years ago now. Well, okay, so let me try to communicate some of the main points that he makes. Okay, so what Russell does is he starts off by saying that for some of us, a great deal of our unhappiness is the result of feeling like an outcast or outsider. And we feel like an outcast most palpably when our beliefs and our sentiments are anathema to the particular society or community or family in which we live or have grown up in. It's what we feel like when we have views and convictions that we dare not communicate because of the fear of being thought of as different or as weird. Now, to feel isolated like this, in the midst of the status quo and commonplaces of our social world, this can take a heavy toll on us, says Russell. This isolation can cause great pain and unhappiness. Okay, but that's not the whole source of our unhappiness when it comes to being an outsider in our thinking and in our convictions. You see, it also takes a lot of energy to try to maintain our mental and intellectual independence in the hostile surroundings of the tyranny of the majority. What I mean is that anytime we have something different or critical to say, we're quickly silenced or frowned upon. And this means that we have to work that much harder to say things. And that constant struggle, well, that can take a toll on us. Now, Russell does say that there are some of us that are strong enough to handle this. And actually, he uses the poet William Blake as an example. He says that Blake lived in extreme mental isolation, but that he was strong enough to overcome the effects of this due to his conviction that he was often more right than popular opinion was. But unfortunately, we're not all like this. Though some of us are different from the rest of the social world we find ourselves in and want very much to express our beliefs, we just don't have, as Russell says, the degree of force and stamina needed to counteract the hegemony that surrounds us. Again, this is the other source of unhappiness that can plague the outcast. But here's the important thing. Russell does stress that for those of us like this, for those of us without Blake's stamina, it is important that we don't ultimately succumb to fear. It's important that we don't completely cower to the pressure of public opinion. And the reason he gives for this is because to show fear to the majority is to actually further invite their judgment and their tyranny over you. No, instead, the best response is not to be timid, but it's to try to be as much as possible indifferent to public opinion. After all, as Russell himself says, a dog will bark more loudly and bite more readily when people are afraid of him than when they treat him with contempt. And the human herd has something of the same characteristic. If you show that you're afraid of them, you give promise of good hunting. But if you show indifference, they begin to doubt their own power and therefore tend to leave you alone. And actually, Russell does say something else that's connected to this that's interesting. He says that there is another reason why showing indifference is ultimately a good thing. So what he says is that the reason so many belonging to the mainstream get riled up or offended by people with different or unconventional opinions is because, whether they admit it or not, they interpret those opinions as a criticism of themselves. In other words, most people don't like to hear unconventional opinions and judgments because they see themselves as implicated, and so they get defensive. And it's this defensiveness, not the soundness of the opinions that they're confronted with, that ultimately leads to more anger and aggression from them, feeding more into the frenzy that manifests itself as the tyranny of the majority. So again, Russell's solution for the outsider is to just show indifference, thereby avoiding this unnecessary conflict, but at the same time, not cowering to it. But you know what? Let me go back to this idea of defensiveness, because I think it's an important point. So I think that what Russell says is true, and it's true more generally as well, apart from this discussion about being an outsider. What's true is that often when we hear an opinion that we don't like or get riled up about, and which we quickly label a judgmental one, it's not because we've examined the opinion and concluded that it's wrong, but it's because we see ourselves as the object or referent of that value judgment. And so we see it as a personal attack. So if this isn't clear, let me give some examples. So let's say that you believe that eating animals is wrong, or that tipping is wrong. And so one evening you decide to say these things to a group of people around the dinner table. Now, suppose that you don't just make these claims willy-nilly, but you try to give a somewhat thorough defense of them as well. Now, we all know what happens, right? What often happens is that people very quickly get uncomfortable, and in their own private time, they might call you an impolite or judgmental person. Now, what's really going on here, though? Well, what's often going on is that because most of them happen to tip or happen to eat meat, they feel implicated, and so they feel attacked. In other words, they get defensive. And so they get angry, and they call you judgmental. But let's remember that what you did wasn't judgmental at all, at least not in the way that they're using that word. What's actually judgmental is someone calling you judgmental when all you've done is tried to make a reasoned case for the rightness or wrongness of certain cultural norms. If doing so is judgmental, then it's hard to understand how it is we could ever say anything at all, and how we could ever grow and expand as a thinking species. And you know, I have to say that, speaking from my personal experience, I've pretty much always loved and invited contrary opinions and value judgments. Actually, I remember it first really started with one of my first philosophy classes that I took in my first or second year of university. It was a philosophy of religion course, and that professor was an absolute lightning bolt. He said all sorts of things about religion that most of us in that class, all 19 or so, took to be absolutely shocking and scandalous. But of course, he didn't just say these things off the cuff or say them to be shocking, but he also backed them up with reasons and arguments and evidence. Now, Being just 19, all this was not just new to me, but also a lot of what he said, it challenged my very simple beliefs about things like the nature of faith or about the goodness of God. Now, here's the thing. Yeah, a part of me felt a bit dumb and naive when he talked. And because what he said to some extent hit home, because it implicated me and touched upon my insecurities, I could have easily taken what he said personally and reacted by calling him judgmental or offensive or whatever. But I didn't. No, actually, what happened is I sought out more of what he had to say. I truly wanted to learn, despite the fact that it was hard to hear and that it didn't initially align with me at all. It ended up being one of my favorite and most important classes I ever took. And you know, I have pretty much the same response today, not just when it comes to listening to someone, but maybe more often when it comes to reading books. So to this day, if I read a book and come across something new or controversial that the author or thinker says, maybe something that they claim isn't good or right, and importantly, something that I happen to be guilty of, I don't close the book and throw it away. No. What I do is I circle the passage, think deeply about what's being said, crease the corner of the page for future reference, and start to think about how it is I'm going to be forced to change a part of my life because of this really powerful idea or belief that I've just come across. Now, this is the impact of important or challenging ideas. If we let them, if we can get over our defensiveness and our insecurities, then such ideas can often shake us out of our stupor and give our life new directions. Anyway, so back to Bertrand Russell. So he says something else that's connected to all of this that's really interesting. What he says is that sometimes what the best thing for the outsider to do when showing indifference is not enough is just to move locations or to change careers. You see, when we're not in harmony with the conventions around us, we end up being miserable. When we're out of sympathy with a larger crowd, that doesn't bring out the best in us. When we can't be ourselves and express ourselves around others, we lose our sense of humor, we lose our confidence, and we lose our capacity for extroversion. Well, what Russell says is that sometimes the remedy for this is just to move, to transport ourselves into an altogether different community or culture or environment. Importantly, one where our outlook or opinions are not viewed as strange. We have to remember something. We have to remember that the prejudices that we've become accustomed to at home are not worldwide. What's perverse at home may be commonplace elsewhere. Anyway, moving to a new place like this will radically change us, he says. Transported to a new location with altogether different people, we will go from shy and serious and angular to smooth and easy and extroverted. In a word, we'll be happier. And something similar goes for career changes as well, he says. What Russell says is that if you're young and at work, you find yourself out of harmony with your social environment, then you should think seriously about changing jobs, even if this means that you make less money. And that's because when we're young, we don't really know what's possible. We don't realize how much more we could grow and flourish in a job where we don't feel out of harmony with others and susceptible to their prejudices. But at the end of the day, I think that Russell's main point is that the fear of public opinion is just, well, it's just soul-crushing. It's crushing in the sense that it stunts our growth and blocks what true happiness consists in. And, well, what does that mean exactly? Well, what it means for Russell is that it's fundamental to happiness that our way of being and living in the world should issue from our own deep and original impulses and sentiments, and not from those belonging to our families and neighbors. only when this is allowed to happen, are we on the road to a secure and genuine happiness, one grounded in who we are, not who others compel us to be.
You've been listening to
The Wisdom of Podcast.
If you want to know more about this topic or the podcast in general, visit wisdomofpod.com.